So just bear with us while we get set up. In the meantime, this is the Folklife Area Stage, which is organized by the Florida Folklife Program, which is part of the Department of State. Our mission is to document and present the traditional culture of Florida, and that's exactly what we've been doing here today. Tomorrow, you're going to see something totally different. We've been working for over a year on the cattle ranching traditions of Florida. So in that tent, you're going to have saddle makers, spur makers. You're going to have a roping contest. You're going to have cowboying demonstration, cow dog demonstrations, whip making demonstrations. You're going to have cracker horses, cracker cows. It's going to be a real, almost a zoo out here. But, and in this area, we're going to be having interviews with the cowmen of Florida and the cowwomen. And we're going to be having also music associated with ranching traditions. But in the meantime, we're getting set up here with our three musicians. And I'd like to say that they are here thanks to a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and also the Florida Division of Cultural Affairs to the Florida Folklife Program. First of all, just to introduce them briefly, over here we have Eddie Keeney, who's from the area of Donegal in Ireland. He has also been in the Florida Folklife's programs, apprenticeship program. So he has taught a couple apprentices how to play traditional Irish music from the Donegal region. In the middle here, we have Wayne Martin, who has also been in the apprenticeship program as an apprentice to George Custer, although he himself has also earned, of course, the Florida Folk Heritage Award for his excellent fiddling and for being an advocate of Florida music. And now in the center, we have Kostas Maris, who another, of course, Heritage Award winner, who also has been a master in the apprenticeship program. In fact, he's currently teaching a young man of Cretan background in the Tarpon Springs area how to play the lyra. Let's see. And I think we're going to need one more chair over here. Can I? You've got this mic. So, is this on yet? Okay.
Testing one, two, yeah.
So let's start with Eddie, because we're going to start with Beauty Before Age. Oh. So, Eddie, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you learned the fiddle and what the meaning, how the fiddle functioned and the music functioned in the community which you came from?
Hello, everybody. First of all, thank God, and I'm very glad to be back here again. It's been seven years since I was here. I had a kind of a hard time, and I came through it all, sort of, anyhow, and whatever's left of me is back again here today. And I'm very glad to be with you. Now, I came from Ireland in the first place. I came over here in 1948, and I was brought up on a little farm in County Donegal, and we had just about four or five cows and five or six what they call dry cattle and maybe a couple of dozen sheep. And we worked on the farm, and we also, on the sideline, we had what was known as the Irish homespun industry. And that started before my time, and I joined in with it. Naturally, I was there, and I had to learn something about it, where we clipped the sheep and dyed the wool, pulled the cruttle from the rocks, and did all that type of stuff, which was very old-fashioned, way back, you know, when people didn't know too much. But they made wonderful cloth, they made great blankets, and they made homespun clothes, which were a little bit heavy, but very good for winter wearing. And then, later on in years, we got into the better industry of making Donegal tweed, which was spun in the factories, not by the spinning wheels, and by the carders at home, which was in my mother's time. And we wove very fine, very good cloth. We wove for making suits and homes, clothes for men and women. And we made shirting during the war for the soldiers and the army. And it was a very good little industry. It wasn't a steady work, but it was a good substitute. It was like an extra job besides farming. And there was a little money in it, but you never got too far, but you enjoyed what you got. So we did the homespun industry, and then music. Music in Donegal, nearly everybody played something in Donegal. You would hardly go into a house in Donegal that there wouldn't be some kind of a fiddle or something hanging on the wall. And somebody knew how to play at least a couple of tunes. Nearly most of the people, believe it or not, they really, people like music and they like to learn music. And they sort of, it was a hobby along with everything else. And some were much better than others. My brother was about 20 years older than I was. And he used to take me around to meet all the different fiddlers in the county. And we learned a lot of the old Irish tunes from them, which I have forgotten years ago. But people like Jane Scott and George and those people keep reminding me of those tunes. And I play some of them, try to play them right now. And playing the Irish music, we played in people's houses. We had dances. We had reasons to dance sometimes. There was welcome home parties, people coming from America, and people going to America. And when people was going to America, they called that a convoy for some reason or other. Why, I'll never know. I must ask somebody that would know what they meant by a convoy. But that's what they used to say. There's a convoy in such a person's house tonight. Joe's going to America tomorrow. So anyhow, there would be a party for that, or there'd be a party then when Joe would come home 4 or 5 years later with his Rolls Royce and a couple of $1 million and so on. Not everybody came home with a Rolls Royce and a couple of $1 million, but anyhow, that's how we would like it to be. Wish for that. We can wish, always wish. And the music was for fun and for dancing and for local celebrations. But as years went on and we grew up into our teens and then into our 20s, music became a sort of a substitute. We started to learn more about music and dance bands was formed in the county in different towns. Every town had at least a couple of dance bands. And we learned to play the tunes that were beginning to be modern and people knew. And we also played the old tunes. We never forgot to play some of the old tunes. And we played in Ireland, the Highland Fling was one of the greatest dances the most well-known dance. No matter what party you went to, the Highland Fling would be played 3 times more than any other dance would be there. They had mazurkas and barn dances and so on, but the Highland Fling was very much played there. Do you want me to play a Highland Fling?
I'd love it if you could play one.
We'll play some kind of a Highland Fling now. We had in County Donegal, we had a gentleman there. His name was John Doherty. He was of the Tinker, what you call the Tinker tribe. They were just a tribe. They were by themselves. They lived a different type of life than anybody else. But John Doherty, and they made tins, and they sold their stuff from house to house, from fair to fair. But John was one of those, and he also played the fiddle and became a very fine Irish traditional player, and he even won the All-Ireland medal one time. And he used to play a lot of Irish Highlands. So I'm going to play a couple of his Highlands for you now, or I'm going to try to play them. And he had his own way of playing. He bowed his fiddle music, a lot of bowing. Instead of flurrying the triplets, he bowed them. And so I'm going to try to play them, just not as good as he played them, but his fashion anyhow. So here's a couple of Donegal Highlands in the John Doherty type. Let me get a little bit farther from that. Now I'm going to just play one more Highland, and this is more of the John Doherty style, and we just call this John Doherty's Highland.
Demonstrate a couple other types of tunes that might be found in Donegal?
Yeah, John Doherty was a great man for doing some strange tunes, and he used to play a lot of mazurkas, and this is one of the mazurkas, and it's just called mazurka, and that is a dance that stands all over Europe, mazurkas, Italy, every place, and he played this mazurka, and he was just known for to play this mazurka, so I learned it, and I hope I can put it together. It's getting a little stiff in the evening in the fingers there.
You know, I know you've been in the States for a long time, and you met your wonderful wife, Julia, up in New York City. When you came here, did you find there were certain kinds of things people like to play here more than in Donegal, or did the music change over time for you, or what happened?
Well, when I came here and I met Julia, Julia was born in this country, and her father and mother came from Donegal, a different part of Donegal than I came from. The part she came from was the real Donegal, where they spoke the Gaelic, old Gaelic. We learned Gaelic at school, and we were fit to read it and write it in our own way and talk a little bit too, but I forgot all about it. But for the country that she came from, her people came from, they were all Gaelic speakers down there. And that was only about 50 miles from where I lived. But at that time, transportation was scarce, and you know, you walk that far or cycle that far, but it's a long way. And until the automobile became popular, and then things was different. But that's I met Julie in this country, and we got married, and we have 7 children, and everybody's doing fairly well, thank God. So when I came here, and when I left Ireland, I was 26 years old, and music was beginning to change. Like Tina there, Dr. Tina says, things was beginning to be different. The big bands was beginning to broadcast. People were buying radios and good records and stuff, and we were beginning to fall away. And we liked it. It was very good. We still like it. Believe me, we always liked the big band era, no matter what nationality we were or what type of music we played. We always looked up to those people that play that type of music. And we liked it, and we tried to play it and tried to imitate it, because that's what the demand was beginning to be. And when I came to this country, I was very much getting into that type of music. And I met my wife and her people, and naturally they had the more old-fashioned way with them, because they came from the Gaelic in Ireland, and they more respected the Gaelic, the Irish music better. And as time went on, we played the dances, and we mixed the music. We played the Irish music, and we played as much of the American music as we were able to play. And we made a fairly living on that. It wasn't too bad at all. It was a good kind of a living. It was a good side job, believe me. I used to play piano accordion with the bands in the city, and that was the instrument I made. Whatever little I made was on that accordion. Playing the fiddle, there wasn't that much money in playing the fiddle. People loved it and enjoyed it, but it died out with the bands. But then as time went on, I began to meet people and societies in this country that still had the grand old Irish tendency to play the Irish tunes and sing the Irish songs. And I got more and back to it again. Now, when I went out to live in Long Island from the city, and I retired, and I thought I was never going to play again, I heard people playing of all nationalities, Frenchmen, Germans, Italians, and everyone that were playing, and they were playing tunes that I learned when I was 7 or 8 years in Ireland. So I was telling them I used to know those tunes. And they said, why don't you get something and play it? I said, I don't have a fiddle. But I used to play the fiddle when I was younger in Ireland. And they said, well, there was somebody felt sorry for me, and he gave me a fiddle. and sure enough, I joined them, and I played with out in Long Island with a bunch of fellas out there. They called themselves Paddy Doyle's Boots. There were 3 school teachers, and neither one of them ever took a lesson in music, but they learned to play music and learned to sing the songs with the Clancy Brothers and do the Irish tunes. So we did all types of Irish music with them in Long Island, and I enjoyed doing it at a great time. And now I met, when I came over here and came down to Florida, I figured I was going to be really away from Irish music. So I heard about Stephen Foster's Park, and I came over here in about 1990, and I began to learn and I meet these people. And they were very sociable. I find them the most sociable people I've never ever known. And I loved them. Mm-hmm. And I still love them. And I'm so happy to be here today among you people, because you've made a different and a new life for me. And I will never forget it. I'll play an Irish tune now for you, which is an old Irish jig. And we call this... Do you call this jig the... I can't think. I'll think of it before I finish. Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie.
The name of that tune was The Leap Year Jig.
Thanks, Eddie. And we're thrilled to have you back up here, too. So, our next Heritage Award winner is Kostas Maris, who is from Greece. He plays the Cretan lyra. His background is from the island of Crete, although he was raised primarily in Athens, and that's one place where he did learn how to work with marble and things, which is something that he did when he came here to the States. But he, besides playing the Cretan music on here, he also makes the lyras. And although I know a lot of you are probably music aficionados and know a heck of a lot about stringed instruments, I don't know if you know that most of the stringed instruments that we play today originated in what is now the area of Iran, you know, or in that area, and sort of made their way then to the West. And so what Mr. Maris plays here is a rustic violin that predates what we have as the violin. It's still played in Greece, in Turkey, even a little bit to the west of there, also above north of Turkey, and I think probably also a little bit down into the area, probably also of Lebanon and so on and so forth. But could you tell us a little bit about the instrument actually that you're playing?
The instrument, maybe all the countries they play, but they don't play the same thing we play.
Not even in Greece.
Just to clear up that. So that's, you know, the instrument, everybody recognizes it from the island of Crete. This distinguished, shape and the sound, it comes from the island of Crete. They have a different lyras, different shape. You know, in the other islands, in Greece, north, like it says, Lebanon and Iran. I don't know about Iran, but... And, but this is distinguished, from the island of Crete. That's what I find when I was born and I grow up and I'm getting old. The same instrument.
Could you tell us a little bit about the woods and stuff you use in there?
The wood, it's originally, from the back, it has to be a hard wood. This is from black walnut. I made it myself. All my instruments, I made it myself because I love it. When I was a young kid, I was passing the cafeterias and all that, and I hear, in the jukebox, the Cretan music, and I was standing in attention until it finished and then continue go home or go to school or, whatever everything I have to do. But I was standing, to listen. I love that music. And even in Greece those years, it was very hard to learn because in the north part, Athens, in the north part of Greece, nobody likes the Cretan music or the Cretans. We were the rednecks, of Greece. we are the southerners of Greece. So lately, everybody recognizes, even in Greece, the Cretan music, and they love it. Even, the songs we prepare that time, it's like I say, back is a hardwood, like the violin. It has, the curly maple in the back, but the spruce, in the top, it needs a soft wood. Now, to make the lyra, it's for the Cretans, they don't use the spruce. They use something they call them katran. That's a Turkish tree, a family of pine and the cedar. It's mixed. It's another similar wood, 90%. They call them, Lebanese cedar from Lebanon. But this is distinguished, and they used to make it, and it makes that distinguished sound. It sounds like a Cretan music and not like a violin. 90% to the violin, but it's different on when you hear it. So, and they used to do like that. We keep going with the same traditions. It's very hard to find this kind of wood now. And the oldest you can find now, it's 150, 100, 300, 200 years old. And this is particularly 300 year old. It's not the exactly perfect top for the lira, but because it was an old, I put him on. It became okay, too. Matter of fact, it has a knot too in there, And it's very hard to find that wood. And I learned it. I learned the lira, you know, because I love it first. And then, matter of fact, because it was at all liras in Athens, I was trying to learn the violin. And those years, you know, 7 years, 8 years after the World War II, it wasn't that easy. Even the jobs, even the money, nowhere around. And I worked 3 years. You know, I was a young kid, 7, 8 years old, but what work can I do? I was singing the carols every Christmas. So I'd make money, and I went and I bought my first violin. But the violin, it was hanging on the wall, and that guy, you know, he sold it to me. I give all my money. So I took the violin, nobody to teach me now, and I have him home, and I have him up to my bed. So my cousin, she was a little bit thin, she went and she sat on it, and she broke it. So after that, I said, you know, let me turn to the lira part, you know. So, and I found another lira. I worked another 3 years to buy it, but I was keeping it after that. I learned my lesson. And when I came to New York, 1968, it wasn't no way to buy a Cretan lira nowhere. So I sacrificed that all I have, break it, study it, and starting making it. You know, it's not easy to make an instrument if you don't know if not so somebody to show you or how to play it. So, but I learned, and I learned of the best. The best, you know, master, you know, in the Cretan music, his name, he was Tam Skordalos. And he was a lot of, you know, good maestros, you know, in the lira, in the island. Another one, he was Kostas Moudakis. And I learned from the best. How I learned it, by ear. You know, those guys, even if they don't want to teach you, they make a mistake, you know, they have the recordings, they call them. And they're selling it. So I learned. And I play, you know, I learned from the best. And I played twice in the Carnegie Hall. And I performed there. I was the best in the north of part of the United States, Canada and the United States. I was traveling all over, I was playing. And matter of fact, I used to make better money than I used to work in the construction and in the restaurants. So I stick with the lira. After, when you make a family, it's not that easy, you know, to make a, you know, to grow up a family from the instrument. The jobs, it wasn't so many. And I turned them to my old profession, you know, marble and tiles and granite. And 1979, I moved to Miami. And 84 to 85, you know, I met Tina, and we play in a lot of, you know, like now, even for the Museum of Art in Miami. And now, you know, and, I play here. I know my friend here, you know, about 7 years.
Yeah, we play together before. Yep.
We play, you know, and it's a nice. People is around nice, and it's to tell you the honest truth, you know, you want to hear something maybe you never hear me in your life. So you got to be lucky. You consider yourselves lucky. You want to hear something maybe you never hear. You know, it's not that easy to find a Cretan music so you can hear it.
Could you play something? Maybe something by Skordalos?
No, we play. It's a different kind of music. And always, when you go to a party or a wedding or a baptismal or whatever it is, you start with the songs and mandinades, and you play, you know, slow songs until everybody drinks a little bit, and everybody gets crazy, and then you know, the party starts. You know that. And in Crete, they grow up with the guns and arms, you know. Even 4 years old, 5 years old kids, after World War II, they was carrying pistols, Lugers, you know, from the Germans. And our tradition, when they dancing or where they are very happy, boom, 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 they shoot, you know, and a lot of accidents happen. A lot of people get killed. Now they try to avoid that custom because a lot of people hurt. But because if you're drunk and if you don't see, to tell you one incident. I was playing a wedding in the island of Crete, and I have my son, because he's playing laguto. Laguto is the accompany of the lira, you know, like the guitar. And we was playing to a wedding, and certainly I was playing, people was dancing, about 200 people, and then 10 guys, 22 to 30, not more than that, they came in front of me, and they was holding, you know, a barrel of whiskey in one hand and the pistol in the other hand. And the only thing they will say, play. What are you going to do? You have to play, baby.
let's hear some music. Nice music.
Now we can play, you know, something. The way we start, we call them like amanes. Amanes is something, you know, we adapted from the Turkish language and traditions. Amanes, that means mercy. And you have to play a little bit, you know, sad. Now we play a slow dance. Everybody's holding hands. And in the meantime, that time when you dance there and you say the songs, you're talking about your secret love, because no love anybody can know. They want to kill you if you not get married. And they are strict on that. And everybody, you know, talks generally, but, you know, the person, he understands when somebody's, you know, say something. And after that, they dance in the fast dance. That fast dance, they call him Pedozali, and it was only for the warriors. It was the gorillas, because the life in island of Crete, always the Cretans was on the mountains. They was fighting for the freedom. It's the Turks, and then the Venetians, and then the Germans, Italians. Always it was a fight. That's why I say everybody grew up with a gun in his hands. And only the men, they dance in that. Was the, you know, for the man. Is another, you know, fast dance is for the woman. They call him Castrinos because he's from the center part of Crete, the Heraklion, the city of Heraklion. They used to call him Castro, you know, the castle. And they took the name from there.
To Wayne Martin, who primarily plays Western swing and also country Western. He was a student of George Custer. If he could tell us a little bit about the kind of music he plays.
Well, thank you, Tina. We're glad to be here. I want to introduce a fellow that I've got sitting over here I'm real proud to have here today going to play guitar for me. Mr. Carol Clements, y'all give Carol a round welcome. Some of you have probably seen him here before when he'd come and play for Vassar, his double first cousin, so I'm real proud to have somebody playing guitar for me that's of such stature. I really appreciate him being here. But I guess the one thing that I'd like to say is that what I've noticed in listening to the other talk is that the thing that I seem to think that's in common is we all just have a love for the music, number one. And I know when I started, I had nobody to teach me either. And so you just have to get in there and dig it out, and you try to listen, and you try to learn, and you make a lot of mistakes, and that's the way you learn. And I know I got a lot of records, and I'd try to imitate what I'd hear them doing and that sort of thing. But that's the biggest thing. I hoed peanuts all one summer and made enough money to go buy me a fiddle. I went to a gun shop and bought a fiddle, so you can figure about how good of a fiddle it was. And I got a hold of that thing and I found out it didn't have any frets on it. And I figured I'd bought something I couldn't eat. And so I was bound and determined I wasn't going to let my money be wasted. I was thinking about all them long peanut rows, and I decided I was going to make myself learn something on it, and so I've tried to learn a little bit all along on it. The kind of playing I do, though, normally is sort of dance-type music. I used to do some contest stuff, but you really have to be on the top of your game to play that. You got to practice hours a day and learn those particular contest tunes, they call them. But what I do mainly is for dances and shows and things of that nature and backing up a singer, that sort of thing. In fact, we're going to have a dance right here at 7 o'clock. We're going to be doing old country and western swing, so we hope you'll come back and be here with us at 7 o'clock. Kick up your heels a little bit, and we can show you a real demonstration of it. But we'll do you a tune, an old Bob Wills tune in the key of D. That's probably one of the best known Bob Wills tunes around, I guess. I had the opportunity one time to be in a jam session with a fellow that had worked with Bob Wills some. He said, Bob gave me some good advice one time. I said, what's that? He said, he told him, says, now, son, says, when you play in these dance halls out here in Texas, what you need to do is you take your amplifier and turn it about one notch shy of wide open, almost wide open. And then when you come out, play a good, fast tune right to start with. And then you're going to have a bunch of these old boys going to run up the stage, and they go say, hey, man, it sure is loud. Can you turn it down? And you say, yes, sir, we'll take care of it. And just reach back up there and turn it up the rest of the way. Said, then play you another good, fast one, and all them complainers will leave, and then you can turn back there and just turn it down about halfway, and then you got people there that wants to hear you. He said, if you don't get rid of them complainers to start with, they'll just bother you all night long. So we'll do you one of old Bob's tunes. And a lot of what I do is my time spent backing a singer. And Carol here is going to be doing a show down on the main stage a little later tonight. What time y'all go on down there?
8:15.
8:15. So you can come up here and dance a while and then run down there and listen to Carol and then come back up here and dance some more. But I'm going to see if I can get him to sing a little bit for you and show y'all how we back up a singer. What the fiddle does, if you'll notice, is I take what we call the fills. When he's singing, his voice is the lead instrument. And so it's my job to not get on top of him. My job is not to clash with what he's doing. And so what I'm supposed to be doing is trying to help him, support him, try to make him sound good. And you can't do that if you're playing on top of him and covering him up. And so we're going to show you a little bit of that. What were you going to sing?
We'll try Watermelon Wine.
Okay.
Start with you. A. While sitting in Miami, pouring blended whiskey down. This old gray-haired gentleman was cleaning up the lounge. He sat down uninvited and opened up his mind about old dogs and children, watermelon wine. Old dogs care about you, at least that's what they say. God bless little children while they're still too young to hate. There's nothing in this world that's worth a solitary dime but old dogs and children, watermelon wine. Play it, Wayne. Sitting in Miami, pouring blended whiskey down, this old gray-haired gentleman was cleaning up the lounge. He sat down uninvited and opened up his mind about old dogs and children, watermelon wine. Old dogs care about you, at least that's what they say. God bless little children while they're still too young to hate. There's nothing in this world that's worth a solitary dime but old dogs and children, watermelon wine. Thank you.
Thank you all. We appreciate that. But that gives you an idea of what you're supposed to do when you're playing behind a singer. You stay off of him and let him play. And when he wants me to play, he'll tell me when to play. And when you're playing with a dance band, like we'll be doing later tonight, I'll take maybe the fills on the verse and the steel will take it on the chorus or something like that. We swap it around. The guitar will take it to time. And so we mix it up, and that way it's not so boring, you know. What else we got time for, Tina?
Well, I was thinking maybe all of you, you come from such different traditions, but maybe we could get them to play something together and see how it turns out. So how about Amazing Grace?
Thank you.
Well, many thanks to our Folk Heritage Award fiddlers, Wayne Martin, Costas Marius, Eddie Keeney, and I'm sorry.
Carol Clemens,
who's going to be on the stage later tonight. I also want to let you know that Eddie Keeney is going to be giving a beginning Irish music workshop right in this area. If any of you are beginning Irish musicians, we'd love to have you stick around. And Jane Wells and Gordon Scott are going to be assisting, as well as Matt Burnson, Eddie's a recent apprentice. So please stick around here at the Folk Life stage. And thanks again, guys.